Since the natives assumed that such a large number of men could not be without women, all those with a youthful or an agreeable face had to submit to a very exacting inspection.
Without any boomerangs or hafted tools, the hunter-gatherers of Tasmania survived alone for 12,000 years. But today, only fragments of their DNA and languages survive. Much of what we know about these mysterious people comes from early reports, such as those by Captain D'Antro Casteau and his botanist La Billardière. Their encounter in 1793 followed those of Captain Marion and Captain Cook.
The natives conducted themselves in a very different manner to these two navigators. Possibly the gentleness with which they behaved to Captain Cook might be an effect of their terror for European firearms, of which they had received an idea from Marion's having been under the necessity of using them against them. It appears that our arrival at Van Diemen's Land caused the inhabitants to disappear. Their traces could be found everywhere, but we have not seen a single one of them.
At 5 o'clock in the morning, I landed near the entrance of our anchoring place. We soon reached the head of the bay, where we found a hut. The ingenuity with which they had disposed the bark that covered its roof excited our admiration. The heaviest rain could not penetrate it. It had an opening in the side towards the sea, and curiosity induced us to enter. In a very short time we repented, for the vermin that stuck to our clothes bit us in a very disagreeable manner. Citizen Riche found some human bones amongst the ashes of a fire made by the natives. Several bones of the pelvis he discovered by their form to have been part of the skeleton of a young woman. Some of them were still covered with pieces of broiled flesh. I am, however, scrupulous of ranking the natives of this country with the cannibals. I rather suppose that they have the custom of burning the bodies of their dead.
The second excursion undertaken by Messieurs La Billardière and La Haye was more successful than the previous ones. While they were busy with their collection, they heard voices in the bushes, and before long saw quite a large number of natives. They were beckoned to leave their weapons. Our gentlemen also parted with their guns. The natives came forward with confidence, and from that moment onwards, the most cordial relationship was established.
The men and youths were ranged in front, nearly in a semicircle. The women, children, and girls were a few paces distant behind. As their manner did not appear to indicate any hostile design, I hesitated not to go up to the oldest, who accepted, with a very good grace, a piece of biscuit I offered him, of which he had seen me eat. I then held out my hand to him as a sign of friendship. He gave me his, inclining himself a little, and raising at the same time the left foot, which he carried backward in proportion as he bent his body forward. These motions were accompanied by a pleasing smile. They received with great joy the neckcloths which we offered them. The young people approached nearer to us, and one of them had the generosity to give me a few small shells of the whelk kind, pierced near the middle, and strung like a necklace. This ornament, which he called canlaride, was the only one he possessed, and he wore it round his head.
The natives made them understand that they had seen them lying down and sleeping.
He inclined his head on one side, laying it on the palm of his right hand, closing his eyes, and with the other he pointed out the spot where we had passed the night.
These four people, surprised during the night without protection, would have been the victims of the ferociousness of these savages, had they been as perverse as they had seemed to Monsieur Marion in 1772.
One of the most robust presently went into the wood, whence he returned almost instantly, holding in his hand two long spears. Immediately on our requesting him, who carried the spears, to give us a specimen of his dexterity, he grasped one of them with the right hand near the middle, then raising it as high as his head and holding it horizontally, he drew it back toward himself three times, following with a jerk which gave it a very perceptible tremulous movement at each extremity, when he darted it forward near 100 paces.
At length we parted with our new guides,
whose pace was sufficiently slow for us to follow them with ease. It seemed as if they were not accustomed to take a long walk without interruption, for we had scarcely been half an hour on our way before they invited us to sit down, saying Mehdi, and we immediately stopped. This halt lasted but a few minutes when they rose, saying to us Tangara, which signifies, let us set off.
This first encounter resulted in a great longing by everyone on board the two frigates to visit such kind people, who presented an image which differed so much from the reports on all the savages by different travelers. One of the Espérance's boats was sent the next day to Port du Nord. The natives could be seen close to the seashore taking a meal.
This party of savages consisted of 42, 7 of whom were men, 8 women. The rest appeared to be their children.
The facility with which these natives allowed us to caress their children proves how much they trusted us. They showed no anxiety in seeing them in our arms. Since they assumed that such a large number of men could not be without women, they probably believed that the same garments confused the sexes. Thus, all those with a youthful or an agreeable face had to submit to a very exacting inspection. Although they are of good stature and corpulence, their arms and legs are very thin. The shape of ours surprised them enormously, and they would feel in disbelief the calves of those within their reach. The posture of the women when they sit is quite remarkable. One of their heels is positioned to cover their natural parts, although their complete nudity on every other occasion does not permit one to believe that it is modesty that makes them hide what they are not bashful to display when they are not sitting down. They were separated into families. The husband was placed near his wife. Both were surrounded by their children. Several people sat close to them, and the presence of those strangers did not inconvenience them in any way. Their meal consisted of abalones and shellfish, which they cooked on the fire. They willingly gave some of their food to anyone who expressed the desire to eat it, but they did not want to taste any of ours. But a more interesting sight than their meals was to witness the tokens of tenderness that these simple and kind men display towards their children.
These people seemed to be so nearly in a state of nature that their most trifling actions appeared to me worthy of observation. I shall not pass over in silence, therefore, the correction a father gave one of his children, for having thrown a stone at the back of another younger than himself. It was merely a light slap on the shoulder.
The children's trifling quarrels were soothed without violence by a slight punishment, followed by caresses which promptly dried the tears. Oh, how much would those civilized people who boast about the extent of their knowledge learn from this school of nature.
Two of the stoutest of the party were sitting in the midst of their children, and each had 2 women by his side. They informed us by signs that these were their wives, and gave us a fresh proof that polygamy is established among them.
Was it because of their strength? Was it the women's own choosing, or a tribal convention? This could only be elucidated by a long sojourn among them.
The other women, who had only one husband, were equally careful to let us know it. About noon we saw them prepare their repast. Hitherto we had but a faint idea of the pains the women take to procure the food requisite for the subsistence of their families. They took each a basket, and were followed by their daughters, who did the same. Getting on the rocks that projected into the sea, they plunged from them to the bottom, in search of shellfish. When they had been down some time, we became very uneasy on their account. At length, however, they appeared and convinced us that they were capable of remaining underwater twice as long as our ablest divers. It gave us great pain to see these poor women condemned to such severe toil, while at the same time, they ran the hazard of being devoured by sharks or entangled among the weeds that rise from the bottom of the sea. We often entreated their husbands to take a share in their labor, but always in vain. They remained constantly near the fire, feasting on the best bits and eating broiled fucus or fern roots. Our musician had brought his violin, but his self-love was truly mortified at the indifference shown to his performance here. At first, they left us in doubt for some time, on which our musician redoubled his exertions in hopes of obtaining their applause. But the bow dropped from his hand when he beheld the whole assembly stopping their ears with their fingers, that they might hear no more. The painter to the expedition expressed a wish of having his skin covered like theirs with the powder of charcoal. Immediately, one of the natives selected some of the most friable coals, which he ground to powder by rubbing them between his hands. This powder he applied to all the parts of the body that were uncovered, employing nothing to make it adhere beside the rubbing of the hand, and our friend Piron was presently as black as a new Hollander. The savage appeared highly satisfied with his performance, which he finished by gently blowing off the dust that adhered very slightly, taking particular care to remove all that might have gotten into the eyes. These people are covered with vermin. We admired the patience of a mother, who was a long while employed in freeing one of her children from them, but we observed with disgust that, like most of the blacks, she crushed these filthy insects between her teeth and then swallowed them.
They made it known during this encounter that after two revolutions of the sun, they would meet us at our anchorage in the port, and they kept their word. We saw them a short distance away from us. They lit fires to be recognized, and we joined them with great eagerness. There were only 5 men and several children, but the women were probably not very far. We had taken an ape on shore with us, which afforded much amusement to the savages. And one of the crew took a goat with him, which formed a subject of conversation for them a long time, and to which they occasionally spoke, saying, "Médée, sit down." After we showered them with presents, they were invited to come on board. To excite their curiosity, the most intelligent of them was shown the vessels in a spyglass. Several of them came as far as the boat, but after reaching it, all but one refused to get on board. His trust in us raised the favorable opinion I already had on this tribe, but especially on this man, remarkable already by his stature and intelligence. Everything he saw on board was new to him, and would undoubtedly have caused him great astonishment. This he expressed as each new object met his eyes, while he ran along every part of the vessel. He was shown pigs, as well as goats, hens, and geese. I gave him a rooster. I would have readily given him hens as well, had he not told me that he was going to eat the rooster that he was holding in his hands. Of all the objects that we have offered to our good friends in Van Diemen's Land, none of them had been given without its use being explained. The one among them, described as being more intelligent, used the axe that had been given to him very promptly and with great skill. He gave several strokes to a tree in the same direction, and so exactly that he always struck at the same place.
We showed him that he must strike in different places, so as to cut out a notch, which he did immediately, and was transported with joy when the tree was felled by his strokes.
A piece of tree bark used by the inhabitants as tinder was lit in front of him with a magnifying glass. He tried to light another piece. Instead of directing the bright spot on the tinder, he allowed it to reach his thigh. The pain he felt will never allow him to forget the effect of this glass.
We had reason to presume that they had no fish hooks. Accordingly, we gave them some of ours and taught them how to use them, congratulating ourselves at having supplied them with the means of diminishing one of the most fatiguing employments of the women.
Composed of several family groups, without property other than their wives and children, there must exist no cause for dissent, as the only chiefs are those designated by nature itself, the fathers and the old men.
Each family seemed to us to live in perfect independence, though we observed in the children the greatest subordination to their parents, and in the women the same to their husbands.
This tribe seems to offer the most perfect image of pristine society, in which men have not yet been stirred by passions or corrupted by the vices caused by civilization.
The glowing reports brought back by this expedition popularized Rousseau's new theory of the noble savage. However, the next encounter in 1802 would cause disillusionment.